Hello and welcome to the Health Hacks Podcast, the podcast for high-performing professional females looking for practical ways to optimize all areas of their health and wellness. At Health Hacks, we understand that as a busy female, you wear numerous hats throughout your working week. You're trying to juggle it all, while also looking to carve out time to prioritize your own goals. It's challenging. It's therefore our mission to channel your energy into the areas that are going to help give you the biggest bang for your buck, to really make significant changes to your lifestyle in the most efficient way possible. So at the moment, if you feel as though you need more energy, you want to feel more productive to improve the quality of your sleep, to lower stress, to increase confidence, to show up better in both your personal and your professional relationships, this podcast is for you. If it's time you prioritize your health, learn to fuel your body, found time for exercise, and said goodbye to fad diets and inconsistent behaviors for good, this podcast is for you. If it's time for you to step into the shoes of the high performer you know you can be, this is the right podcast for you. Join me and my guests as we take you through the Health Hacks Podcast. Hello and welcome to this episode of the Health Hacks Podcast. You're joining me for episode 2 of our menopause podcast series. If you joined me a couple of weeks ago, you would have heard me kick off our menopause series. We talked about what is menopause and the associated health risks. Today, episode 2, we're going to be looking at the symptoms and diagnosis. Join me every second week for the next few months. We're going to be going into a topic every single episode specific to menopause. We'll be covering things like nutrition around perimenopause and menopause, looking at things like exercise, menopause in the workplace, as well as a special Q&A episode. So if you do have any questions, if you'd love me to expand on anything, something that is specific to you and your journey, do send them over. This will be completely anonymous, of course, but send over any questions that you may have as we go, and we'll be doing a Q&A episode at the end. A huge warm welcome if this is the first time that you're joining me on the Health Hacks Podcast. We're here every single week diving into a topic specifically focused towards women's health. But this menopause podcast series is a passion project for me at the moment. As many of you will know, I am a certified menopause support coach. And the idea with the podcast series, the mini menopause series, is that we're going to be building on our knowledge as we go. So you can either start right at the beginning with me and we can build and learn and grow. Or if there is an area of menopause that you are particularly interested in, you can jump ahead straight to that episode and get all of the information that you need in the here and now. As I say, if this is your first time, a huge warm welcome. If, however, you are a dab hand, you are a veteran of the podcast, you tune in every single week, you're a subscriber, even better. And if you'd love to show your support for the show, I would be eternally grateful. I really, really would. And there are two brilliant ways to show support for the show. If you have taken any golden nuggets of information, if you have found any value in the work that we do, we keep this obviously away from any kind of paid advertising. Our information isn't behind a paywall. This is all a passion project of mine. So if you were able to show support, as I say, I would be eternally grateful. It helps us spread the podcast message, but also helps us get amazing guests on the show. So if you would like to show your support, there are two ways to do so. You can hit the subscribe or the follow button on your podcast platform of choice. You can scroll down either on Apple Podcasts or Spotify is the other place that you'll find us, and you can hit the subscribe button, or you can share to with someone in your inner circle. Perhaps you know someone who has expressed maybe a concern or the questions, or you've had a conversation around menopause recently, or perhaps there's someone in your life who is on a health mission. Maybe they're looking to lose some weight, maybe they're looking to improve their sleep or boost their energy or improve their diet, and you think that they would find any of the of some of the material that we produce here at Health Hacks valuable, do feel free to send that over to them. And coaching, if you're interested in finding out more about our one-to-one coaching services, you can find out more if you scroll down in the show notes below. There are links to both the website and to my personal calendar. If one-to-one coaching is something that has been on your mind for a while, we're now going into Q2. I know we're speeding through the year. We really, really are. Perhaps Q2 is the time for you to start making leaps and bounds forward in your health and well-being journey. The clocks have changed, the weather is improving, you've perhaps thinking or have booked your summer holiday and you're thinking, right, I want to get in shape, or I want to feel absolutely fantastic going into the summer months, and you're interested in finding out more about personal coaching, get in touch. I'd love to hear from you. And before we get into this week's episode, just a reminder that this podcast episode series is for information purposes only. If you've got any medical questions or concerns, do please reach out to your medical practitioner. In our last podcast episode, we covered what menopause was. So I'll do just a few seconds of a recap here. If you want to find out more, so go back to episode one. Estrogen and progesterone and testosterone are hormones produced by our body naturally. And they will fluctuate and eventually decline during perimenopause and menopause. So naturally, if these hormones and our hormones contribute and can control all of our bodily functions, if these hormones are in a bit of chaos and eventually they're going down, it would make sense that they can trigger and cause a bit of chaos in our entire system. And that's really what's going on very, very simply in perimenopause and eventually in menopause. In the last episode, we also explained the different stages of menopause. So you'll be familiar at this point that menopause is really an umbrella term that we use in colloquial common language. But when we say menopause, we can often be referring to one of the three stages, perhaps perimenopause, menopause itself, or postmenopause. We know that the average age of menopause in the UK, so this is the one day when you haven't had a period for 12 consecutive months, the day after you are said to be menopausal. And the average age of that date is 51 in the UK. It's common for women to be experiencing symptoms 10 years prior to that date. So anyone in their 40s listening to this is likely to be in perimenopause. And that's one of the most common phrases or questions I hear is, Caroline, you know, I'm way too young to be thinking about perimenopause. Or Caroline, you know, how can menopause be affecting me right now? I'm in my late 30s, 40s. Well, you know, we're not able to say the exact date when we are menopausal. We are not able to predict exactly when our periods will have stopped after those 12 consecutive months. We actually obviously only know what that is in hindsight. So you can see why it will be difficult to know when we are in perimenopause. Very tricky to diagnose. Okay, but today I'm going to be running through symptoms of perimenopause and menopause, and I've chosen some of the most common ones to explore in a little more detail. There are a lot, but I've chosen the most common ones. Before I go into this list, however, I'll say, thankfully, you won't usually experience every single one of these symptoms. It will more than likely be a combination of symptoms that are happening to you. But some symptoms can trigger others, and it makes sense. Think of night sweats, for example. If you are waking up frequently throughout the night, having to change sheets or to go to the bathroom or to change pajamas, sleepwear, whatever it may be, if you're having consistent disturbed sleep, poor overall sleep quality, anyone who's ever been sleep deprived will know that the impact that that can have on things like mood or dietary choices the next day, which then can downstream lead to weight gain, there's a huge ripple effect. So we're going to be talking about symptoms, but being very aware that we can't really think about these symptoms as satellite components. There's a lot of crossover. There's a lot of a domino effect, as it were, and it's important to bear that in mind. Some women will find it challenging to spot their symptoms because of the very busy and demanding lives that we all now lead. Perhaps you're juggling kids, parents, you've got an incredibly busy job, perhaps a partner, social commitments, all of these things. It's absolutely right that you would feel tired at times, exhausted, perhaps experiencing anxiety because of everything that you're juggling, having trouble sleeping. Again, this is the ripple effect. And often the hectic nature of life is masking menopausal symptoms. Women are not able to spot very subtle changes, particularly at the start of their journey, because of everything that's going on. Some women will experience more physical symptoms. others perhaps psychological symptoms, others maybe a combination of both. As your hormone levels change, it can be common for symptoms to come and go again. So even within an individual, we will have different symptoms specific to us, but then those symptoms may not be predictable. They may come and go throughout the months, throughout the years. So you can see how it can be tricky to spot changes. Some women won't experience symptoms. Some women will sail through menopause, so to speak, and for them, absolutely fantastic. I would, of course, say, and referring back to our previous episode that was focused on health risks, that even if you don't have a hard time with symptoms throughout your perimenopause and menopause journey, a hormone change will still increase some health risks. Heart disease, osteoporosis, just as an example. So it's important to be mindful of that and adjust your life accordingly through lifestyle choices. Women's health is an appropriate and important topic at all age ranges. So again, I hear this a lot. Caroline, I'm too young to be experiencing perimenopause. Doesn't mean that women's health topics aren't still applicable. Caroline, I think I'm going through perimenopause, but my symptoms aren't too extreme. Okay, well, we can start to bolster against any future symptoms, and of course for life postmenopausally. Maybe I'll speak to women who have gone through the menopause and they'll say, Caroline, I went through that a decade ago. Well, then again, there are lots of hot topics at the moment around longevity and protecting, bolstering our health in later life. So still very, very applicable. The purpose of this episode is not to scare, nothing like that. It's really to shed light and to build awareness. I'd encourage you, if you do identify with some of these symptoms, to then double down specifically on those and work through ways to manage the ones that are applicable to you. Like I say, it's very unlikely that all of these symptoms that will affect you directly, but the ones that do, let's find strategies to cope with them. So let's go into our menopause symptoms. Some of them are really well known and the others can be a bit of a surprise. And the ones that you're familiar with, the typical ones, the hot flashes, the night sweats, weight gain, these are common symptoms, but there's 38 listed symptoms in total. Seems a lot. And shall I run you through them? Yeah, do you know what I will? I've got a great table in front of me and I will run through all of these symptoms. Again, we wouldn't expect all of these to impact you at any one time, but things you might experience: altered skin sensation, anxiety, bladder infections, body odor, brain fog, breast tenderness, breathing difficulties, burning mouth, changes to nails, changes to taste and smell, dental issues, depression, difficulty concentrating, dizziness, dry eyes, dry mouth, fatigue, fertility issues, forgetfulness, hair changes, headaches and migraines, heart disease, heart palpitations, hot flushes, joint pains, lack of motivation, lack of concentration, loss of confidence and self-esteem, loss of sex drive, mood swings, muscle aches and pains, night sweats, osteoporosis, period changes, skin changes, sleep issues, vaginal dryness, vaginal irritation and itchiness, and weight gain. Just to emphasize the point, we would expect an individual to experience some of these symptoms to some extent. I'm far from suggesting every one of these will happen. The British Menopause Society has conducted a brilliant online survey of women between 45 and 65, which gives a really good overview of symptoms, how frequently women are reporting them. So 1,000 women in the study, and on average, women reported experiencing 7 different symptoms. And they are ranked in a wonderful, wonderful list that I can go through some of these. Top of the list at 79% of women having experienced them were hot flashes, 70% night sweats. Some of the other common ones, 52% of women described mood changes. So low mood was generally the one. 47% experienced weight gain. 39% difficulty with memory and concentration, all the way down to 13% who reported pain during sex. So there's a huge range of symptoms, and obviously the frequency in which ladies are experiencing them also ranges massively. We'll go through some of these in a bit more detail. Not all of them. That could be a podcast episode on just the physical or just the psychological symptoms. We really could go into these in depth, but we will go through some of the most common ones that I work with my clients to address, and then some of the strategies that we use. I'm going to interrupt this episode for no more than a moment to say that if you are currently experiencing perimenopause or menopausal symptoms or postmenopausal, or you just have an interest in women's health generally, I'd love to hear from you. The podcast is a wonderful part of my week, but of course, the vast majority of my time is spent in my one-to-one coaching business, working with women just like you who want to maximize their health in their busy lifestyle. We work closely with you as an individual, providing support and accountability to help you reach your health goals. Perhaps weight loss is your goal, making lasting changes to your diet. Perhaps you're fed up of yo-yo dieting. Perhaps you want to improve sleep or reduce stress, or maybe you'd love to exercise consistently, but you keep putting it off. Having a coach there to keep you on track is perhaps the piece of the puzzle that you've been missing. If you'd love to find out more, I'd love to meet you. There's a link below in the show notes to our website, but also to book in a short 15-minute informal chat with me. I'm looking forward to meeting you. For now, let's get back to the show. Changes to your period. I'd like to start here, as this is the one I actually discuss most in my own coaching practice with ladies who are considering that they might be perimenopausal. Chances are it's the first real sign. It's the most obvious one to know, particularly if you're someone who has been tracking their menstrual cycle. I'm going to talk a little bit about tracking later in this episode, but you may be able to spot changes to your periods quite quickly. And why this happens, fluctuating hormone levels can do one of two things. You will either find that your periods become much lighter or heavier than they used to be. You'll find that your cycle can lengthen or shorten. You might find that your menstruation, your period of menstruation, so your actual bleed changes. So it's either maybe it was 3 days before and now it's 5 days, or it could go the other way. Maybe you're 5 days and then it becomes shorter. You might also find that your flow changes. So perhaps you were someone who experienced quite light periods, very, very regular, very light periods, and you might notice that there's changes to the flow. They might become less frequent and then tail off, eventually stopping altogether. A special note here for women taking contraception, as it's obviously much more challenging to monitor changes when we don't have a monthly bleed. So with the Mirena coil, the progesterone-only pill, the implant, or the contraceptive injection, many women don't bleed or experience any changes to their pattern of bleeding. The combined oral contraceptive pill, that will keep your periods regular even throughout perimenopause, as it's not a true period in a sense. So if you're taking hormones, it can be a challenge to spot any changes to the bleeding patterns to work out whether you're in perimenopause. So that's not one that we can necessarily rely on completely. So just a small note there if you are taking any of those methods of contraception. The second most common conversation I have is around hot flushes and night sweats. Now, these are known as vasomotor symptoms. So the hot flushes, along with the night sweats, they're the most common and potentially instantly recognizable symptoms of menopause. They affect 3 in 4 women, and they're most frequent in the first year after your last period. And on average, they last around 8 years. They can extend into postmenopausal years, and around 40% of 60 to 65-year-olds still experience hot flushes and night sweats. So it's a very real consideration. It's often a feeling of very intense heat, and it can come on incredibly suddenly and spread through your body. They can vary in severity, frequency, and duration. So for some women, they happen regularly, while others will only experience the odd one here and there with no distinct pattern. They generally last for a few minutes, sometimes shorter and longer, and some women will experience them during the day or some during the night, which is what we call night sweats. Some ladies experience both. And you can have one without the other. So you may be someone who experiences night sweats, but not the daytime flushes, and vice versa. Night sweats are similarly very common. Many women find that they wake up several times during the night and they can be drenched in sweat to the point where they need to change their pajamas or nightwear or bedding. Not only is obviously that a horrible symptom for you to endure, it's disruptive of sleep. It's obviously very distressing to have to get up. It's not practical to be changing bed sheets and nightwear every single night, but it can also be really disruptive to your partner's sleep too, if that's applicable. As if that wasn't distressing enough, during your hot flashes or sweats, you can experience other symptoms like dizziness, heart palpitations, blushing. Flushes and sweats can be spontaneous, so we can have no idea that they're going to occur, or there can be common situations that will spark them. So things like periods, if we could get embarrassed, if there's a sudden change in room temperature, if we get stressed, alcohol, caffeine, hot drinks too, there can be distinct triggers, and that will be specific to you. We still don't fully understand vasomotor symptoms, unfortunately, though there's a recurring theme with a lot of the things that I will talk about today, and it is these fluctuating estrogen levels. So what's happening in this instance is as estrogen fluctuates, it affects a part of the brain called the hypothalamus. Now, you don't need to know very much about the hypothalamus, but think about it as a thermostat within the body. It controls a lot of the temperature regulation. And as our estrogen is fluctuating, our temperature, our internal thermometer is knocked off. So an extreme change in temperature or moving into a new space, potentially it didn't bother us before, but what it can trigger in our perimenopause and menopause journey is a more extreme reaction because of that change in that part of the brain. So again, we don't fully understand how this works, and there are other factors in the nervous system that are likely involved to do with serotonin and noradrenaline, but really it's this part of the brain, the hypothalamus, the temperature sensor, as it were, that is affected. As distressing as that is on its own to deal with, one of the most common concerns around hot flushes is the effect of them or the experience of them in public places, which of course we can absolutely understand. And layer on top of that, the concern of having hot flushes in the workplace. That has its own set of worries and concerns for women. And I know that a lot of us are following a hybrid working model. So we're doing a degree of working from home and working in the office, particularly for those days when we are working around other people. And you are experiencing unpredictable hot flushes, it can be very, very concerning. And work in itself can be stressful. We may be working around colleagues who trigger a stress response in us on the best days. So layer on top of this, the hot flushes, it can be a huge, huge challenge. You may have to wear a uniform as part of your job role. You may feel as though you're unable to control your immediate working temperature in the environment. That's a concern, as well as being mindful of the response of colleagues or clients, patients, whoever you may be working with around you. It's easy to see why this does worry a lot of women. Studies have shown, this is so problematic, that problems with hot flushes and night sweats are one of the reasons that women are likely to consider giving up their jobs. And if you're having these thoughts, you really aren't alone. And it's important for you to have the support around you, as well as the ability to find relief from your symptoms. So you can try talking to your line manager or someone in HR. Many companies do have policies in place now for menopause, but find out what the situation is for you and obviously your working environment and find the support that you need. Okay. Things that we can look at from a personal level, and obviously take this with a pinch of salt, you may not be able to control every single one of these, but things that we do recommend our clients consider are wearing loose clothes, which means that it can keep us cooler and mean that we don't need to worry necessarily if we sweat throughout the day. Layers are also your friend. So a number of thin layers can make it easier for us to take them off and put them back on as and when our temperature fluctuates throughout the day. Try wearing clothes made of natural fibers like cotton, linen, bamboo, These are breathable, so it's going to make it much easier for you to regulate that temperature. So extend that as well to cotton in the bedroom. If you can sleep in loose, light cotton nightwear, and use cotton sheets instead of any man-made fibers. Sheets can be a wonderful, sheets instead of a heavy duvet can be a wonderful alternative, because again, it gives you options so that you're not having this all or nothing of a really heavy duvet making you feel very, very warm, or nothing when you have to throw it off. Give yourself options with sheets if you possibly can. And try and keep your bedroom temperature cool generally. Now, this would be the case for anyone. We want to keep our bedroom temperature cool to promote good quality sleep. So you may have to open a window, or if you have the option to have a fan in the room, that can work very, very well. And have a spare set of night clothes and a towel close to your bed, which can make things helpful if you are, or make things easier to navigate during the night. Cooling sprays and personal fans can be really, really great. So you can get these small little fans that will go in your handbag or personal cooling sprays that can allow us to cool. And in our working environment, again, we mentioned it, but speak to your employer or a manager to either have control over the room temperature or try and have a personal fan there if you do need it. So there are things that we can do and that we can take control over a personal level to manage our hot flushes so that we can relieve some of this concern around the unpredictability of them. Brain fog and poor concentration. So brain fog is incredibly, incredibly common. In research conducted by the British Menopause Society, 40% of women interviewed reported issues with memory and concentration as they go through menopause. 50% reported low concentration, tiredness, and poor memory. And a huge study commissioned by Channel 4 showed that 73% of women interviewed experienced brain fog. But what do we mean when we talk about brain fog? It's that awful feeling when your brain, it makes it really difficult to think clearly. It's almost like having candy floss or cotton wool in your brain. It can go hand in hand with other changes. So they're usually temporary. The brain fog kind of come and go at various points. Again, it can be unpredictable and it can fluctuate throughout your menopause journey. It can be linked to things like difficulty in concentrating, memory loss, forgetfulness, difficulty recalling the right words. And I've heard women, you know, the frustration that women express when they experience this, because a lot of the women I work with will have very demanding job roles. They will have, you know, their days that require them to be working very, very high cognitive demand, a lot of executive function required for their roles. It can be incredibly frustrating to be in this position. It can be debilitating, especially if you're someone who has been incredibly capable. You're in a high pressured and high performing role. There's a lot of pressure on you, and it can ultimately affect your levels of both confidence and self-esteem. So it's really important that we acknowledge that this is a real thing. And ladies will often use phrases like, "Caroline, I just don't feel like myself," or "I just don't feel that I'm as capable as I once was," or "I don't feel like I'm resilient. I think I'm going crazy," or "I've even wondered if I have early onset dementia." These are all phrases that I've heard. And I think acknowledging that brain fog is a real thing, it is something that so many women do experience, and knowing that in and of itself can help relieve some of the pressure associated with it. But brain fog, to say 73% of women said they experienced some degree of cognitive, temporary cognitive impairment. Weight gain, another really common one. I want to start by saying the aging process has an effect on our weight. And we discussed this in our previous episode. And it's to do with issues around bone density loss, and sarcopenia. That's the loss of our muscle mass. And from the age of 40, our muscles do lose strength and mass. Again, this is estrogen at play. As estrogen declines, both our muscle mass and our bone density does decline. It can do quite rapidly through our menopausal years, and we have to bolster against this. But what happens is it's largely down to the drop in muscle, lean muscle tissue. As our lean muscle tissue decreases, our metabolism shifts, meaning we are more likely to gain fat. So ladies will say, I went through the menopause and the menopause caused me to gain weight. Well, strictly speaking, the drop in estrogen affected our lean muscle mass, which caused us to be less efficient with the calories that we consume, and therefore weight gain was a downstream effect. That's actually what's happening if we go into to the mechanics and the mechanisms as to what's going on. So yes, we are more likely to gain body fat. Falling estrogen levels can also alter the way we store fat within the body, and it can often more so cause a greater fat distribution around our middle. So ladies will often describe going from a pear shape or an hourglass shape to being apple shaped, holding more fat around the tummy area. If you've ever heard that, I'm not a massive fan of it, but the phrase menopause belly fat, this is really what we're talking about. But the issue with storing fat around the abdomen is the increased risk of heart disease, diabetes, and cancer. Earlier in life, when weight increases, many of us will revert to things like cleaning up our diet, you know, making sure we don't buy any biscuits with our shop or saying no to the cake with our coffee. And we might increase the movement. So we might do some more steps. We might join a spin class, do some more exercise. That's what we do in a bid to manage weight. However, with menopause, there are other symptoms that come along. So things like achy joints, the low mood, the self-esteem that we've already discussed, throw the tiredness into the mix, and it's really easy to see why skipping exercise and reaching for sugary foods that are going to boost our energy, we can see why that's appealing and you can see why it happens, right? But the unfortunate thing with that is it's a negative loop. So we've had a poor night's sleep because of our hot flashes and our night sweats. We wake up in the morning, we don't want to go to our exercise class. We grab a high sugar snack mid-morning to boost those energy levels from our poor night's sleep. We get that to go along with our coffee, and you can see why it spirals. So we really need to take control of this, have a handle on our weight management. As we know, the research has shown that weight and an increasing our weight can have an increase and exacerbate the severity of our menopause symptoms. So unfortunately, gaining weight will make generally our symptoms harder to cope with. So weight gain is a real thing, but there's lots that we can do. And the last one that I want to touch on in this episode is mood changes, because we've talked so far about a lot of physical symptoms, but many women cite that the psychological symptoms associated with perimenopause and menopause are actually the hardest to cope with. Mood changes are extremely common, and they can vary. So you might feel angry one minute, incredibly tearful the next, and this lack of control is ultimately what can feel really distressing, confusing, and kind of a huge effect on women's self-confidence, their relationships at home and work, but also their relationship with themselves. Because what will often happen is women will lose trust at their ability to cope with situations. They may have felt very, very strong and capable previously, but when they're not able to predict their moods in quite the same way, it can feel very, very distressing and as though they have a lack of control. Why does it happen? Again, you know what I'm going to say, it's estrogen. Estrogen helps regulate serotonin, and serotonin is a neurotransmitter that signals between the nerve cells in your body and the brain. And it's often known as the feel-good chemical. It has a positive effect on mood and emotion and energy and sleep. So as estrogen falls, it can directly affect our mood. Again, you might experience things like anger or aggression, panic, poor motivation. Maybe you just don't feel that you have that drive, not interested in much around you, or tearfulness or emotion. Many women will describe all of this together as, they're losing their oomph for life. They feel flat, don't feel like themselves. If you've had postnatal depression in the past or a history of premenstrual syndrome, then it's more likely that you'll experience mood change symptoms during perimenopause. This is because your body is more sensitive to changing levels of hormones. So very often we have similar levels of hormones in the female body, but some individuals are more susceptible to changes in those hormone levels than others. Menopause mood changes shouldn't be confused with depression, but unfortunately and very frustratingly, we're seeing that around 65% of women are being offered antidepressants by doctors before being asked or exploring their menopausal symptoms to a greater extent. There is no evidence that antidepressants help improve low mood associated with perimenopause and menopause. And from my coaching standpoint, we deal a lot with the management of menopause symptoms naturally. There is so much that we can do to boost mood naturally through control of lifestyle factors that for me, I find it particularly frustrating because it's like putting, in some instances, I should just be careful in my wording there. In some instances, it's like putting a plaster over a wound. And the approach that I prefer to take where it's appropriate to do so is really diving into the root cause of what is going on in someone's life that is causing their mood to be low. And if there's ways that we can resolve that naturally, I would try my utmost to support that individual to do so. We've discussed it already, but layer on top of this things like tiredness through lack of sleep. So if you are experiencing hot flashes, night sweats, you're anxious in the evening, maybe you're experiencing urinary problems that's keeping you up at night, it's no wonder that women find it really, really difficult to get a good night's sleep. And anyone who's struggled with chronically bad sleep night after night after night after night will know what a negative impact that has on mood. So again, I go back to lifestyle factors. In this instance, we would look at things like sleep architecture, sleep routines, how much we can do naturally to help support our ladies. Okay, that was symptoms. We've covered those. And again, this isn't intended to scare anyone. We're on a mission to inform, not to panic. But once you've acknowledged that, okay, well, something might be up, what do we do with that information? And how do you get a diagnosis and ultimately the help that you want and need? I'll go through some of the tools that I use with my clients who suspect that they may be experiencing perimenopause, menopausal symptoms. And from there, hopefully it will give you some idea of some strategies and some tools that you can use straight away. Let's start with the Green Climacteric Scale or the GCS. So to build as accurate an assessment as possible of where you may be on your menopause journey, we use a tool called the Green Climacteric Scale. The GCS is a verified measurement tool used by practitioners worldwide. And I'm actually going to link a copy of our version in the show notes. And it's a wonderful way to assess, as I say, where you are on your journey and to assess your symptoms at a point in time. So if you're tracking your symptoms, you'll be able to spot how they change over time. And not only that, if you introduce any treatment, you'll be able to see how effective that treatment is. So how does it work? So I'll start by saying caveat, this is a subjective measure of your menopause symptoms. Essentially, the GCS asks about your menopause symptoms and it allocates points for those different symptoms. Now we've gone through various categories already, but the three categories of the GCS, they fall into three categories that range from psychological, your somatic symptoms, those are your physical ones, and your vasomotor. So those would be your hot flushes and your night sweats. Studies have shown that women who score over 12 on the GCS are more likely to be menopausal. However, pinch of salt here, there is a wide range. It's possible to score low on the GCS but still be menopausal. And you'll see there are some categories. So for example, if you score low on the GCS but you're experiencing night sweats, those night sweats could still mean that you are in menopause. So it's important to have this conversation with your doctor about treatments of that. So while there are limitations with the GCS, it is a really good tool to use to understand the symptoms that you're experiencing, as I say, in a snapshot in time. And the idea is that you will assess those symptoms consistently throughout your journey to see if there have been any changes. Very, very simply, when you open up the GCS, and they'll give you a list of symptoms down one side. As I say, they fall into those three categories, and you can basically range, you can mark off the where you are on the scale of a certain symptoms. Do you experience it frequently, sometimes, not at all? And there's a point system associated with that. Tracking your cycle. Your menstrual cycle is a really good way, as we mentioned previously, to spot any changes. During a lifetime, the average woman will experience 450 periods. I was quite shocked by that number. I don't know why. And you may be really familiar with your cycle, be it from notes in a diary when your period is due, or maybe you just know. Maybe you've just got really, really in tune with knowing that a few days before your period, you have menstrual cramps or really low energy, or you have increased cravings, and you just know, okay, well, that means that my period's due in 3 days. So ladies are very, very in tune with their body, and knowing their cycle inside and out allows them to build up a really, really good and accurate picture of what normal, what baseline is for them. You can be perimenopausal and still have regular periods. And as we mentioned, there's a slight consideration if you are taking a contraception that will mask a natural cycle. So you might still have regular periods, or you'll find that your periods have changed since you've been experiencing these hormonal fluctuations. They might be more erratic, they might have changed in length, or the flow has changed. Whatever your situation is, however, tracking your periods can be beneficial. And this doesn't need to be high tech, this doesn't need to be incredibly detailed. You might have, and you might still put a P in your calendar just for the days when you're having your period. You might note it on your Google Calendar at the bottom, you have your periods noted. However you choose to do it, however basic or high tech that it is, it's a good idea to still be tracking those periods. However, if you want to go a step further, and I really recommend that during your perimenopause journey, you consider this. Smartphones now and apps have really, really fantastic platforms that allow you to track your periods, but add in a little bit more information, layering a little bit more information that will give you a good idea and build a more accurate representation of what is going on with you. So alongside the date of your period, you could note how heavy or light the flow is. You might experience additional symptoms like cramps or skin breakouts, skin changes, tiredness, fatigue, headaches or migraines, bloating or mood fluctuations. It could be anything. So tracking your period, but doing so with this extra layer, is incredibly informative. I had a wonderful client who we tracked her period for a number of months, and it was absolutely eye-opening. We actually got to the point where she noticed in her own cycle, she was experiencing migraines every third period. So although they weren't every single month, they were clockwork in how they appeared. It was every third period she got these crippling migraines. And the thing about this is that, yes, it's very, very inconvenient, and she would have to take several days off work when they did happen. But she did feel an element of control because she was able to plan. Knowing that about her cycle was a superpower. So yeah, a huge amount of value in tracking the period. And I know it can be very, very challenging because, you know, what we're discussing by nature, we're almost expecting our periods to be more erratic. So is there value in still tracking it? And yes, absolutely, because there can be patterns in what feels as though it may be erratic. There are very often patterns that we can form. And layer on top of that, tracking your period and having this information to hand can be absolutely invaluable for your GP or your healthcare provider. Because our appointments, whoever it may be with, tend to be very, very short, they can last, you know, under 10 minutes, you're able to take along this information and have this bank of data that you can present to your practitioner and say, listen, I've been looking at this over a number of weeks and months. I've noticed these changes. This is what's happening. I can spot the trends. It really does arm that individual with a lot of information and makes it quicker and more effective for you to get the diagnosis or ultimately the help that you are seeking. So logging information in addition to your period, like your emotional state, your energy levels and behavior, can be really, really useful. And like I mentioned, it can be reassuring to know that dips in mood or anything along those lines can be hormone related, and it can make it quite explainable. And although we may not always be able to control it, it can bring a sense of control, knowing that this is quote unquote normal for you. It can be very, very alarming when things seem as erratic as they can. But if you can bring that element of control, it can really give you peace of mind, reduce anxiety and overwhelm, and can ultimately lead to you feeling happier throughout your menopause journey. So there are a few apps that you can use. There is one specifically for perimenopause and menopause called Balance, which you can download from the App Store, wherever you get your apps, or another platform called Clue, which is another, you can use the free service there, and it will allow you to track your symptoms in a similar way. Try them out, find what's potentially the platform, maybe the interface that you like the look of, or maybe you have your own method of tracking, whichever way. You know, I've seen ladies have shared Google spreadsheets with me and things like that. However it is easiest for you to track your cycle, double down on that. And like I say, if you can do that for several months, ultimately the more information you have, the better, but I would gather as much as you possibly can. And the last note that I'll make on this is on blood testing, okay? If menopause symptoms are affecting your day-to-day life, you should absolutely be going to see your GP. And your GP should be able to tell you if you're in perimenopause or menopause based on your age, your symptoms, and how often you're having your periods. Okay, so it's unlikely that you're going to need tests, but it would obviously help your GP out massively if you can take as much information as you possibly can to them. So if you are in that category, you're unlikely to need tests. And the NICE guidelines, this is the National Institute for Health and Care Excellence, are very, very clear that women do not need blood tests if they're over the age of 45 and they're experiencing symptoms. You may be offered a blood test under 45. If you're 40 to 45 and have menstrual symptoms, so including changes to your cycle, you may be offered a blood test. If you're under 40 and your GP suspects you're in menopause, so that would be premature menopause, in that case, you may be offered a blood test. What are they actually testing for when they're taking your blood? So the blood test will measure a hormone called FSH, which is follicle stimulating hormone. And FSH tends to be found in higher levels in menopause. So bloods can be taken for FSH and potentially LH, luteinizing hormone. But if it is possible to do so, it would be beneficial to also have your estradiol, which is, there are three different types of estrogen, and estradiol is your queen bee of estrogen, if you want to think about it that way. So if you can also have information around your estradiol, SHBG and testosterone, that would really help your practitioner support where you are on your menopause journey. Although they're not 100% accurate, they are better than FSH alone. But perhaps blood testing will not be required if you have information and if you are able to provide that information around your cycle and your symptoms to your practitioner. So tracking and charting your progress is absolutely essential. And it's not just what the symptoms are, but how are they affecting you? What is the downstream effect? What is the effect of these symptoms in your work life, your relationships, your concentration, your fatigue? It's really important that you're clear about what is getting in the way of managing your life and being able to relay that clearly to your practitioner. When it comes to the diagnosis process, and if you do get to the point where you are booking an appointment with your healthcare provider or your GP to discuss menopause, I would highly advise putting this information together in as clear a format as possible, putting your symptoms together in a really easy to read list, putting any questions that you may have together in a really easy to answer way, so that you're maximizing and making the most of that GP appointment. They don't have enough time. And I mean, I know this, my father was a GP, and I understand how much pressure they are under. I know what can happen when I certainly go to the doctor. I tend to lose my head and forget what I was going to say or what I was really there to. And we don't focus on, well, I certainly have been prone to not focusing on the right thing. Whereas if you can write everything down, particularly applicable if you're experiencing brain fog, write everything down, have it there, really, really clear, easy to read, so that you and the GP can refer to that information. So lots of information today. Remember that symptoms are varied, and they vary from person to person, but can also fluctuate and change within our own journey. Perimenopause, menopause, it isn't black and white, unfortunately, and a lot of this is working in the grey area. I don't feel myself is a common description that a lot of individuals will voice when going through the perimenopause journey. And obviously that is very individual to you. Sharing and talking about menopause with women around us, whether that is a friend group, whether it is close colleagues, whether it's family members, whether it's a coach, sharing and talking about your menopause journey is fantastic, and it is wonderful to share that experience. But remember that not everyone's journey will mirror yours. And often that's what can prevent women from coming forward for help, for healthcare, for guidance, is because they don't hear other women voicing the same concerns or symptoms as they are. But you are an individual and your journey is your own. The last thing that I'll mention on symptoms is they can be alleviated, of course, by medical intervention, of course. But what we specialize in here is a natural approach to menopause management. And this is the management of lifestyle factors. So looking at things like exercise, though I like to refer to it as movement during this time of life, nutrition, working on sleep behaviors, habits. We talked about the importance of weight management. These things all help to moderate symptoms, but also think of them as an insurance policy for later life. Many women arrive to me and they'll say, "Caroline, I wish I'd been conscious of my health earlier in my 30s. I wish I'd had good habits around diet, nutrition, and exercise then, because it would have made this whole thing a lot easier." Let me say, it's never too late to start this, but it's also never too early. So think about this as an insurance policy for life. There is so much we can do, and take confidence away from that. And that's what we're here to support our ladies to do. I will include links to our own GCS, our Green Climacteric Scale, should you wish to have a look at that, as well as a link to the Balance app. I really hope you've enjoyed the second installment of our menopause podcast series. We're going to be looking next week at nutrition around menopause specifically, then into exercise, then into how menopause is managed in the workplace. And I would like to do that Q&A episode. So if you do have any questions about your own symptoms or the diagnosis, please do send them over. Again, I'm going to keep everything completely anonymous, so don't worry about that at all. If you would love to show your support for the show, I would be hugely appreciative. I really, really would. Either hit the follow or subscribe button on your podcast platform of choice, probably Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or send to a friend. Maybe you have a wonderful group of women who you meet up with to go for a walk or to do park run or to meet at the gym, or ladies who go to a class of yours, or perhaps you have a networking event, or just even women in your workplace. Send this podcast episode to the group. It might be something that would really, really help someone in your inner circle out. I really hope that it does. If you're interested in one-to-one coaching, if you can relate to a lot of things that I've discussed in this episode, but you want to get some one-to-one guidance and explore approaching menopause naturally, do reach out. My details are in the show notes. The next stage would be to jump on a really formal discussion. It's 15 minutes long. It would be with me personally, not a member of my team. And of course, everything is confidential. And the purpose of that call is really for us just to get to know each other. It's just to find out if we would be a good fit and the right team to help you get to where you want to go in your health journey. And just a gentle reminder that this podcast episode series is for information purposes only. If you've got any medical questions or concerns, please do reach out to your medical practitioner. Okay, thank you so much for joining me on this episode of Health Hacks. I appreciate you so much. I appreciate your attention. Every single week when I see our podcast numbers growing, I'm very, very thankful that you choose to spend your time with us, particularly if you've gotten to this point in the episode. So I thank you very, very much. Stay happy and healthy, and we'll see you next week.